So with me now is Joseph, who's a writer for Calmzine and also just a generally all-round nice dude. Nice to meet you, Joseph. How
nice
you doing?
Nice to meet you too, Alex. Pleasure.
Thank you very much for agreeing to take part in Rock Against Depression. For people that have not quite yet heard about what it's all about, I'm really proud that we're doing this here at Kerrang, because I think depression is something that loads of people deal with on a daily basis and not enough people have the confidence to talk about. And actually, before we came on air, we were talking ourselves about how it can be quite difficult to just take that first step and actually open your mouth and talk to people about it. Mm-hmm. How have you come to deal with that?
This has to go all the way back to my teens, and I think it comes about, not to make this a binary thing, but it comes about in two parts. So when you're coming up as a young lad, the social conditioning that you're subjected to, obviously you're meant to just basically stiff up a lip, or as they now refer to it often as man up and things of that nature. Mm. You are more likely and more inclined to be more stoic about it and just basically not say anything at all. However, this is immediately countered by the fact that there are people that you're closest to that can obviously see there's something wrong. You know there's something wrong, but you're either scared or too proud, or a combination of both maybe, to actually say something about it. And the one person that actually got it out of me was my mother. Mm-hmm. She knew that there was absolutely a problem.
I feel very kind of close to this, because when I grew up, I've always been the kind of person to wear my heart on the sleeve, right? I've never kind of felt like I couldn't discuss my emotions. And I don't know what that is. I don't know whether that's because of my mum or my dad or the way I was brought up. I don't know. But I've always been quite open with stuff. So when I first came across the idea of depression when I was about, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 or whatever it was, and realised this was something that people dealt with and that some guys didn't talk to their friends and didn't talk to their family about it, I kind of found it quite unusual in a sense. I felt quite detached from the rest of the world, because most of the guys that you kind of see or talk to don't talk about their feelings in that way. Mm-hmm. And there is a sort of stigma attached to it. Mm-hmm. that I think we actually collectively need to break down, which is where this has all come from, really. Because yep. I think unless people do talk about stuff, then people are just going to feel so isolated. And that's just not going to help anybody.
And I think you're absolutely right. I think what you mentioned, how there is a stigma, and as I say, I go right back to that, and this is going to sound cliche by the time we finish, by the way. But it is, and absolutely, I truly believe it to be a social conditioning from the moment that they declare it's a boy. It's what you're subjected to. Same thing for girls, but as I say, there are unique sorts of applications to the way that the social conditioning goes apply, from the kind of colors that we choose for what, you know, it denotes masculinity or femininity and all that sort of stuff, from the way that femininity is used as a pejorative mainly, from the way that masculinity is used as the default for things like strength and brawn and all that sort of stuff. It all comes across as asinine the older that you get. Mm. And I think most people do realize this, but because it acts as like some sort of ominous storm cloud that's just hovering over you, where you say something, some holy, unholy rain is going to fall down on your head and that's it. You know, you're going to be made out to be like some sort of, they'll dismiss you as crazy. Mm. And I think depression is something that is absolutely not your brain malfunctioning. And we're talking about a human life at the end of the day. And this human life is literally feeling as if it's on fire and it just wants to put the fire out, and it will do anything at all to make sure that they can get a modicum of peace. Mm. And, you know, a lot of that and how we go about addressing that and how we go about what they need, not necessarily what they want, but what's needed, how we go about doing that comes across as ham-fisted. So when you say that we need to break things down, obviously, there's things that we need to change about how males interact with other males. There are different ways that we need to kind of look at the way that we've done these things for however many years. And I'm sure this has been going on longer than anybody on the planet's been alive. But we do need to come together as men and basically just look at the beast in the mouth, essentially.
Oh, man, I could listen to you all day. Right, let's talk specifics about you and how this has touched your life and affected you.
Sure.
So tell us about a particular time when you felt down or felt depressed.
I think the one that always sticks out in my mind is the first time. The first time it really, really came to a head. I was 17, 18. All the things that I had dealt with in my childhood and adolescence, Be that the very, very turbulent relationship with my father, being that the very turbulent relationship that I had with others at school. Essentially, it all came to a head when I first started self-mutilating myself. And this was before the physical self-mutilation. This was all basically taking anything negative, even constructive criticism, taking it, form it into a weapon, and basically attacking myself with it. I felt petrified to make any mistakes, and it's still something that I deal with to this day, because failure is one thing that I don't handle very well. Even if it's just perceived failure, it's not actual failure, I still don't handle it very well. And everything just started to fall apart. I became detached from people that I was close to. I became more reclusive. I stopped eating as much as I should do. There would be days where I go without a meal. And I wasn't necessarily hungry. I didn't feel hungry. I probably should have ate something, but I didn't feel hungry. So the whole mental state has a direct correlation, and I think at least medical science certainly supports this, has a direct correlation to how you're going to physically feel and how you will then go from day to day. But it's amazing how I say that all happens and what the brain becomes conditioned to after a while. It's when you don't realize you're actually careening to rock bottom until you've actually landed there. That is the precise thing that I think people only latch upon when it happens, but there's nothing that they do or feel compelled to do to get that, to prevent that. And really, there is something that you can do. The most powerful thing that I think anybody can do in that situation, that is witnessing somebody they love or that they respect or that they just care about, is just listen. There is real, real power in just listening. Not saying what you can do, not making a suggestion. It's not so much, what can I do? It's more, what do you need?
Mm.
And I think that was the most powerful thing that anybody can do. I mean, you don't need to be a medical professional to be a psychiatrist. You don't need to be that, well, you do need to be a medical professional to be a psychiatrist. Let me retract the rephrase. You may not be a medical professional, but you don't need to be a psychiatrist in order to listen to somebody.
Mm.
You don't need to be a therapist in order to just listen to somebody. Because at the end of the day, when anybody is suffering, I don't care who you are, if you're a human being, you just really need somebody to listen. And that's key.
But the flip side, obviously, to needing someone to listen is you need to be able to talk. So
yes.
You also need to have it, find it in yourself, however it is to talk. Now, again, like, sort of not to bang on about myself, but I do this thing, and I've always done it my whole life, as far back as I can remember. Whenever I've got an issue that I'm working through, whether it's something that's bothering me personally, something at work, maybe someone said something that's annoyed me, all this kind of stuff, I find myself doing this thing. And I don't know whether this is like normal, I don't know whether other people do this or not, but if I'm driving, I'll talk out loud to myself and like just monologue my way through it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now in the way my life is, I've got a wife and, you know, I'm either at work or I'm at home with my wife, you know, I'm always around people all the time. It's very rare that I have the opportunity to be by myself to talk openly out loud to myself. So I've started doing it with my wife, and she totally gets it. It's brilliant. Like, and she knows that I need to do it. And she doesn't, at first, when I first started talking to her, she'd be giving me all this advice. She'd be saying, oh, well, you know, you could do that to do that. And I'd always like have this weird experience in my sort of felt in my body, really, where I was like, I almost don't want you to give me advice. I just want you to let me do this, you know. And now she gets it, and apparently I've got to tell when I'm about to launch into a monologue, I'll sort of just lick my lips ever so slightly, and then I'll say, and this happened, and this person said this, and blah 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 blah, and literally like 20 minutes later she's like, okay, so you're done, have you achieved what you wanted
exactly
to achieve?
Exactly. So essentially that's it. And some people are so introverted that talking, finding that right environment to talk about things, it's not going to work for them. So, you know, and a lot of people always talk about, why would you put your life on social media? There is so much power in just having your space.
Mm.
So I don't care if it's a Tumblr, I don't care if it's your Twitter and your microblogging, I don't care if it's your WordPress, your Facebook wall, anything whatsoever. If you're putting it out there, that's therapeutic. Now, yes, it's put in a public domain, so obviously there's going to be some insensitive out there that feel like they don't need to see this or read this, and they'll feel the need to tell you about it. And that has its own detrimental effect in and of its own right. But the fact that you are putting it out there either in writing, or if you're putting it out there in just a notebook, or if you're putting it out there just finding some secluded part of London, if there is such a thing, and just yelling, wherever you may be in the country, in the world, it doesn't matter. Putting it out there, it not only will give you pause, but it will give you relief. Mm. And I can't state or understate the power of that. I think that's it's absolutely magnificent what that can do. Mine is, because not everybody is so artistically inclined, but mine is either poetry or writing a song about it. Mine is also launching into rants. And I think Twitter is probably a godsend for that, because there's things that I see or I'm confronted with or happens to me either directly or indirectly. And I don't want to hold it up. I don't want to bottle it up. So here's a space for me to just go ahead and launch into it. Bless the 1,442 people that are actually reading this stuff.
Woo!
Because they don't have to, but that's the reason why I locked into that.
But you know, it's a lot of people that you talk to, sort of band-wise, they talk about artistic release. You know, people like Ollie Sykes, for example, from Brim With The Horizon, you know, he said in interview situations with me before that, you know, if it wasn't for having the opportunity to put everything he was feeling into music and getting on stage and be able to scream about it, like openly, that he wouldn't necessarily feel like he'd still be here, you know, which is a terrifying sort of thought.
I did read his interview in the comm zine, not the last one, but probably the one prior to that. And it was interesting because I remember him mentioning that a lot of those feelings are embodied in his lyrics. And you can definitely tell every time you open your mouth and talk about it, and this is me talking from hindsight, because when you're going through this, this sounds like absolute nonsense. But every time you open your mouth and you express how you're feeling, that is an opportunity to find some peace. That is the golden goose. That is essentially what everybody who is depressed, and this might be assuming too much, and I apologize in advance, but that, I think, is the key. That is the end goal. Because nobody who's depressed wants to be feeling like that anymore. That is fundamentally what it is, and it doesn't seem like much. Feels like absolutely like, no, you know, why can't I just have £1 million? Or, you know, why can't I just have a shiny new Audi R8? But that's not going to make you feel better in the long term. People want something tangible. I think we've all been kind of trained to have something physical to take away and to kind of show off to people, like, you know, it's like a shiny new coat or something like that. We want the physical, but the metaphysical, the things that we can't see but we know are absolutely there, the end goal is to basically be rid of this dread, this eternal dread that you're feeling. And if talking to somebody, whether it be a medical professional, whether it be somebody that you can confide in and trust, whether it is absolutely nobody but yourself, whether it's your notebook, if expressing how you feel brings you that much closer to that end goal, that is the golden goose.
Joseph, it's been absolutely amazing talking to you. I just want to ask this final question.
Of course.
If there was one piece of advice from all your experience and everything that you've experienced in your life that you could give to anybody that's listening now that's either just started to deal with this kind of stuff or has been dealing with it for ages and not known what to do about it, what would that piece of advice be?
You are you. You come before you. And I definitely didn't borrow that from a Poison the Well album title.
You did.
But yes, you do come before you. You matter. You will always matter. And that's all I have to say. Do something you care about. That is the one thing that I think, above all else, there's plenty of others that I've learned to pick up along the way. But to counter that constant, maliciously negative monologue that comes along with being depressed, do something you care about. It doesn't need to be grandiose. It never needs to be grandiose. It's just something that's accessible. So at the time, and still to this day, there are two things that I latch upon immediately. One is music, definitely music. And second is video games, a driving game, or I play something like a platformer that is so unbelievably whimsical and fantastic that it just, okay, I know this doesn't exist, but I love all these colors right now. So something like that, do you know what I mean? Sonic the Hedgehog was big. I'm a big Sonic fan. And any Mario fans out there, I'm sorry, but you backed the wrong guy. Sorry. Sorry to
sorry to be that guy to burst your bubble.